You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
In the last episode, we looked at Lee Harvey Oswald's interaction with the American embassy in Russia, including some communications from the embassy that either showed foreknowledge that Oswald would soon be arriving at the embassy, or were just a big coincidence, which is possible. We also got into the question of why the CIA delayed opening a routine 201 file on Oswald, even though the CIA determined that Oswald was important enough to be one of about 300 Americans who had their mail read by the joint CIA-FBI Operation HT Lingual. There wasn't a clear answer as to exactly why the 201 file was delayed, other than the fact that James Angleton, the CIA's head of counterintelligence, was involved in the matter, according to other people in the CIA who worked with Angleton. We don't know exactly what that means at this point, but it's not nothing. We also discussed the decision of the Soviets to relocate Oswald to the city of Minsk, about 9 hours southwest of Moscow in Belarus, which, of course, at that time was part of the Soviet Union. In this episode, we pick up with Oswald in Minsk. We'll cover how his relationship with Marina began, whether Marina was a KGB asset, and we'll revisit what American defector Robert Webster said about Marina.
In Dallas, Texas, 3 shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
I don't know what this is all about.
Dallas police this morning resumed custody. The man they have formally charged with the assassination of President Kennedy.
I'm just a patsy.
The man is Lee Oswald.
Was Oswald acting alone, or was he a member of a conspiracy? Commission answers, he acted alone.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton. On March 17th, 1961, about a year and 2 months after Oswald first arrived in Minsk, he met 19-year-old pharmacology student Marina Prusakova at a trade union dance. Marina had moved from Leningrad to Minsk in 1960 to live with her aunt and uncle. After she moved to Minsk, she also spent some time in Moscow where she had a Moroccan exchange student boyfriend, Mohamed Ragab. Ragab had recently broken up with Marina before she met Oswald. According to Lee Harvey Oswald's historic diary, he asked Marina if he could walk her home after the trade union dance. And he did walk her home, along with 5 other guys. Oswald's diary entry says, quote, "We like each other right away. She gives me her phone number and departs home with a not-so-new friend in a taxi. I walk home." A not-so-new friend? It sounds like Oswald's diary is saying that Marina ditched him and took a taxi with one of the other 5 guys who was trying to walk her home. Now, whether she was just friends with this guy or something more was going on, that's not exactly a romantic first meeting for her and Oswald. Now, aside from Oswald obtaining Marina's phone number, it doesn't seem like he particularly made an impression on her when they first met. I mean, she did leave with another guy. So how did they end up getting married? Marina told the HSCA in 1978 that she first really spoke to Lee after the dance when they were invited for tea at a gathering at someone's house. But that's not consistent with what Lee's diary says. It's also not consistent with what Marina said to reporter and former CIA asset Priscilla Johnson in the book that they co-wrote together titled Marina and Lee. In the book, Marina says that Oswald was in the hospital on March 25th and she got a call to come visit him there. But records from the 4th Clinical Hospital in Minsk show that Oswald was actually admitted to the hospital on Thursday, March 30th, after complaining of pain in his throat. He then had his tonsils removed and stayed at the hospital until April 11th. Curiously, when he was questioned by doctors, Oswald said that he never had any type of venereal disease, which we know is not true given the records of his treatment for gonorrhea while he was in Atsugi. But maybe Oswald was just too embarrassed to admit it. Who knows? Given that he was in the hospital for 12 days, we would expect Oswald to either not have any diary entries for those periods, or if there are diary entries, we would expect them to mention the fact that he was in the hospital. If you're writing about your life and you've been in a hospital for more than a week, you'd probably mention that fact in the diary. But Oswald's diary doesn't say anything at all about him being in the hospital, even though there are diary entries that cover the period of time when he was there. There's an entry for March 18th through the 31st that says, quote, "We walk. I talk a little about myself. She talks a lot about herself. Her name is Marina Prusakova." An entry for April 1st through April 30th says, quote, "We are going steady and I decide I must have her. She puts me off. So on April 15th, I propose. She accepts." At the time, couples who wanted to get married in Minsk were required to file a notice with the government 10 days before the wedding. Despite Oswald saying that he proposed on April 15th, documents from the registrar's office in Minsk show that Marina and Lee filed a notice of intent to marry on April 10th, which is one day before Lee was released from the hospital and 5 days before he says he proposed. Once again, we have a conflict between Oswald's historic diary and other known facts. It makes a lot of sense to me that if you were in the hospital, you would stop writing in your diary. But that's not what happened here. Lee did write diary entries for the period where medical records show that he was in the hospital, which is when Marina says she got to know Lee. But somehow, he left out the part about all of this happening in a hospital. Additionally, Lee would have had to propose to Marina before they filed this notice to marry on April 10th, but he says that he didn't propose until April 15th. Now, people get dates wrong all the time, but you would think that dates in a written diary would be less likely to be wrong. In my view, all of these conflicts tend to undercut the credibility of Oswald's historic diary. Marina and Lee are eventually married on April 30th, 1961, about 6 weeks after they met at the dance. Now, just to recap, the official story is that Oswald lost out to another guy the night he met Marina, but then he got her phone number that night and apparently called her while he was in the hospital. And then Marina agrees to come visit him in the hospital, even though she had only met him briefly at the dance and he was among five other boys who was walking her home. While Marina visits Lee in the hospital, she apparently falls for him, sort of like Marty McFly's mom did in Back to the Future after he got hit by a car. And then Lee proposes and Marina accepts his marriage proposal. That is the official story. Marina and Lee were not alone a single time before they were married. This seems weird, but I suppose it's possible. My grandmother met a guy who promised her a piano after meeting him on a bus, and they got married and ended up staying married for over 50 years until my grandpa passed away. People get together in strange ways that don't make sense to others all the time. But still, something seems off about Lee and Marina's relationship. Gerald Posner explains the quick marriage before the two really had a chance to know one another as a result of Oswald being on the rebound from when he was rejected by Ella German, although Oswald did date Nelia in between Ella and Marina. Posner also says that Marina never had an apartment of her own, and she wanted to live in Oswald's fancy apartment. This seems incredibly superficial, but again, my grandmother got married for a piano.
Hey everybody, Matt Crumpton here. When I'm not researching, writing, or recording, one of my favorite ways to relax is with federally legal THC from Mood.com. This stuff doesn't come from a lab. It's pesticide-free and grown on American farms. You can get 20% off your first order using the code JFK. One of my go-tos is the functional gummies from Mood.com. These gummies only take 15 minutes to feel the effects, and you can choose all kinds of different moods, from creativity to pain relief to just plain old relaxation. Everything comes right to your door and is discreetly labeled. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, you also get 20% off of your first order using code JFK. So head on over to Mood.com and find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. Remember, use code JFK for a 20% discount.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
The rapid speed of Marina and Lee's marriage has led to questions about whether Marina may have been a Soviet KGB agent. While there are no declassified KGB files that prove that Marina was in fact an agent, the possibility that she was is worth exploring given a few other pieces of information that have come out over the years. When Marina moved to Minsk, she moved in with her uncle Ilya, who was a high-ranking member of the Communist Party and a colonel in the MVD, the Russian Ministry of Internal Affairs, which worked closely with the KGB. That doesn't prove that Marina was KGB, but it is a direct connection. Perhaps more incendiary than Marina's uncle being loosely tied to the KGB is a declassified CIA document from Oswald's 201 file titled Indications of Intelligence Involvement by Marina Oswald. In that document, the CIA lists 29 potential reasons to believe that Marina was affiliated with the KGB. By way of example, here are just a few of those 29 indications. The mystery of her father could be a cover story to hide a, quote, cover-damaging father. She refused her first job assignment and had no negative consequences. She took vacations and ate out at restaurants without having much money to support herself. Her uncle must have been important since he had a VIP apartment in Minsk. And her surprisingly quick decision to marry an ill-tempered foreigner. In addition to the CIA's concerns about Marina specifically, there's also a declassified CIA memo from Thomas Kasason of the CIA's Soviet Russia division from November 25th, 1963, just a few days after the assassination, And that memo says that Kasason wanted to talk to Oswald while he was in Russia, but he never had the chance to. One of the reasons he wanted to speak with Oswald was because there was a trend of Soviet women marrying foreigners and then eventually divorcing their spouses when they were back in the spouse's home country. Some of these women ended up tied to the KGB. Kasason wanted to warn Oswald about the possibility that Marina could be KGB and might be using him to get a legitimate foothold in the United States. But Kasason never ended up speaking to Oswald, as far as we know. After the assassination, and after Jack Ruby killed Lee, James H. Martin became Marina Oswald's business manager to help her navigate different potential offers for the purchase of her life story rights. Marina told Martin about her life before she met Lee. She said that she once entertained the ambassador of Afghanistan in his hotel room in Leningrad. She later told author Norman Mailer that the Afghan ambassador actually raped her. This begs the question of how Marina got into a position to be entertaining the ambassador of Afghanistan in the first place. When the House Select Committee on Assassinations called James Martin to testify, and he began telling the story about Marina and the Afghan ambassador, the interview was stopped and those comments were stricken from the record. Yuri Merezhensky told Norman Mailer that he knew both Lee Harvey Oswald and Marina in Minsk. He claimed that Marina got in trouble for always hanging around the Hotel Leningrad and that she was sent away from Leningrad to Minsk because of prostitution with a foreigner. So who was Yuri Merezhensky? He's the man who introduced Marina to Lee, according to what Marina herself told the Warren Commission and the FBI. So Merezhensky is not just some random guy. And remember, Robert Webster, Oswald's fellow defector to the Soviet Union in 1959, claimed to have met Marina at a trade show in Moscow when she lived in Leningrad. And he says that Marina spoke English when the Warren Commission says that she spoke very little, if any, English. Now, the information that I just laid out does not prove that Marina was KGB, but we should certainly keep an open mind to that possibility between her uncle's affiliations, her interest in foreign men, the existence of a Soviet honeypot expatriate divorce scheme that was already identified by the CIA, and the 29 reasons why the CIA thought that Marina might be KGB. On May 16, 1961, Oswald wrote to the U.S. Embassy to inform them that he was now married and that he wanted a full guarantee of immunity before traveling to Moscow. The United States State Department interviewed both Marina and Lee in July of 1961 in person at the embassy in Moscow. It was then determined that Oswald never renounced his citizenship. This meant that he could come back to the United States. Remember, Oswald didn't fill out the proper paperwork, and he didn't visit the U.S. Embassy on a business day, so his attempt at legal defection failed. Oswald told them that he never spoke to Russian authorities or gave them any information, which he had previously threatened to do. American consul Richard Snyder said in his report, quote, Oswald indicated anxiety as to whether he would face possible lengthy imprisonment, but the State Department instructed Snyder to, quote, not give any assurances one way or the other about prosecution. By the summer of 1961, the wheels were in motion for Lee and Marina to leave the Soviet Union for the United States. Lee still had to get an exit visa from the USSR, and Marina needed to get permission from the Soviet Union and the United States. While they waited for a decision for much of the rest of 1961, Marina and Lee were living in Minsk, where everyone knew that they were trying to leave for America, making them into social pariahs. Marina finally received the Soviet travel approval on Christmas Day of 1961. but she still needed her American visa. On January 5th, 1962, Oswald wrote to the U.S. Embassy in Moscow asking for a loan for travel expenses back to the United States. The embassy responded on January 15th that Oswald needed to provide evidence that Marina wouldn't become a public charge in the United States and that he could do so through an affidavit of support by one of his close relatives. Now, before I immersed myself in Oswald's time in Russia, I always thought that this loan to Oswald showed some sort of conspiracy in the form of the American government providing help to a false defector. But it may have been more routine than that. Yes, it's weird that the State Department would give a loan to somebody who was threatening to provide military secrets to the Soviets. But the loan itself is not the weird part. Getting a loan, which was required to be repaid, was probably not a very big deal after all. The weird part is that Oswald wasn't arrested on sight, and he was allowed to get his passport back after threatening to give secrets to the Soviets, travel loan or not. On January 26th, the State Department sent a memo to the U.S. Embassy in Moscow that Marina could not come to the United States. But the U.S. Embassy in Moscow either didn't get the memo or they ignored it because after they received it, the embassy counsel Joseph Norberry nevertheless wrote to Oswald telling him that the embassy would accept his application for a loan. On March 9th, U.S. Embassy Counsel Norberry again wrote to Oswald that the embassy could offer a $500 loan as soon as Marina's visa was approved. For whatever reason, Norberry was continuing to ignore the January 26th State Department memo that said that Marina was not approved to travel. The basis for her failure to be approved was that immigrant visas were not permitted from the Soviet Union. For reasons that have never been explained, higher-ups at the State Department escalated the Marina Oswald case to the Immigration and Naturalization Service to bypass the law prohibiting Soviets from immigrating to the United States. On March 22nd, the Bureau of Consular Affairs at the State Department wrote to the INS Commissioner, Raymond Farrell, urging him to reconsider Marina Oswald's denial. Just a few days later, on March 26th, Oswald received notice that Marina had finally been approved to travel to the United States. The obvious questions raised by the circumstances of Marina's visa approval are, why did the State Department care enough to escalate Marina's case? And why did the INS commissioner bypass the law to help Marina come to America? On September 13, 1960, Lee Harvey Oswald had his Marine Corps discharge status changed from discharge for dependency to take care of his mom to an undesirable discharge based on reliable information which indicated that he had renounced his U.S. citizenship with the intention of becoming a permanent citizen of the USSR. Oswald wasn't happy about this change in discharge status. On January 30th, 1962, he wrote a letter to the Secretary of the Navy requesting that his undesirable discharge from the Marines be reversed. In the letter, Oswald says, quote, "I have and always had the full sanction of the U.S. Embassy and hence the U.S. government." It sounds like Oswald is saying that he has the permission from the U.S. Embassy to be in Russia and that he has the blessing of the government to do what he's doing. But maybe even more interesting than that, the man Oswald wrote the letter to was none other than John Connolly, who, according to the Warren Report, Oswald would later shoot from the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository. Small world. Connolly responded to Oswald on February 23, 1962, that he was no longer the Secretary of the Navy and that Fred Korth was the new Secretary of the Navy. Remember Edwin Ekdahl, Marguerite Oswald's second husband? She caught Ekdahl cheating and divorced him. In that divorce, the attorney who represented Ekdahl against Marguerite Oswald was Fred Korth, who went on to become the 57th Secretary of the Navy. I do think that this is just a coincidence that has no bearing on the case, but it's crazy that back-to-back secretaries of the Navy had such close ties to Lee Harvey Oswald. We talked about defector Robert Webster earlier in the context of his claim to have met Marina in Moscow in 1959. It turns out that Moscow wasn't the only time that Marina visited Webster, according to him. Webster, who lived in Leningrad, where Marina was from, applied for an exit visa from the Soviet Union in the fall of 1960, which was denied. He was told to reapply in a year. Marina was working in Minsk at the time and took a vacation to Leningrad, today known as St. Petersburg, which is about 12 hours away from Minsk, in the fall of 1960. This was all before she met Oswald. Marina didn't tell the Warren Commission who she was visiting on this trip, but she told the FBI that she met Lev Przintses, and the FBI found that name in one of her notebooks. When the FBI looked into who this guy was, they found that Przintses lived in the same apartment building as Robert Webster. Przintses was apartment 7, and Webster was 18. Webster confirmed to author Dick Russell that he did see Marina for a second time in Leningrad. They spoke only in English when they were together. So Oswald and Webster both defected a few months after 1959 on a Saturday when embassy offices were closed, had potentially sensitive information, were befriended by Marina Pusakova, and both men returned to the U.S. in the spring of 1962. In a country as big as the Soviet Union, what are the chances that Marina would meet two of the first three American defectors by happenstance? That seems incredibly unlikely to me. Next time on Solving JFK, we've got one episode to go on Oswald's time in Russia. Among other topics, we'll explore how Oswald's Russian was described while he was in the Soviet Union, whether he actually offered any secret information to the Soviets, and what was going on behind the scenes at the State Department when it came to Lee Harvey Oswald. If you heard anything that you believe is out of context, or if you have additional information to offer, you can let us know at solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide citations to the record for any fact that you're relying on. For transcripts, sources, and official podcast merchandise, visit solvingjfkpodcast.com.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Thanks for listening. Visit solvingjfkpodcast.com for more information.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.